Welcome to For the Record, an unfiltered view on current trends and timeless advice for surviving in the aesthetics industry. Whether you're an injector, practice owner, sales rep, or marketer, it's time to set the record straight. Each week, we cut through the chaos and showcase diverse perspectives and winning ideas from the best minds in the industry. I'm your host, Dr. Tiffany Hall, Chief Growth Officer at Aesthetic Record. Now, let's get started on this week's episode.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of For the Record. And we have today with us a guest from the outskirts of Boston, Fiona Tennant, who is a newly crowned nurse practitioner. She is the owner of Nurse Fiona Med Spa. And she is, I don't know, a friend of mine from, we go way back, I think 6 years. We met early on when I was doing a game program around game business. Back then it was called AMP. And she walks into my classroom and the rest is history. She was a budding entrepreneur learning how to run her business, how to be an injector inside of this crazy world that we live in aesthetics, and has just absolutely blossomed. I've watched her go from really just learning about her to becoming an Instagram celebrity, to having a successful practice, to spending, you know, a lot of time in school and kind of buried in the books and getting that all done, to now officially being a nurse practitioner and on to the next big best things. And she's running a successful business, hiring and firing and doing all the things that we all have to do every single day, and doing it with gorgeous blonde hair, a smile on her face, looking like a model 24/7 in the midst of all the chaos. So Nurse Fiona, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much. I definitely don't look like a model 24/7. We were supposed to do this last week and we rescheduled because I didn't realize this was going to be on camera. So I'm like, yeah, we need to spark up a little bit. But 12 years in the industry now. And I think I met you, Tiffany, probably, I think it was maybe even 8 years ago. I don't know, 6, 8 years ago. And I have my practice in Framingham, Massachusetts, started out as a registered nurse, and I did just graduate as a nurse practitioner, passed my boards, got my DEA, my NPI. I am good.
You're legitimate. And you come from, obviously you have a CAN certification, which they don't, I say obviously as if everyone knows you. You've done the CANS thing. You were an RN in the hospital world, I think before this, maybe I think pediatrics. And obviously that's a brutal, I can't imagine being in peds, like just, you know, the babies. It's like, I could never be a veterinarian or a pediatrician. Can't do it. So I think you probably had a lot of stories from there, and then obviously transitioned from there into aesthetics. So give us an idea of kind of your healthcare background, because I think people end up here and are like menagerie of misfits is what this industry is, from lots of different places. So how did you get here?
So yeah, I started out as an LPN actually, and I worked in the ER, and then I transitioned into RN and did pediatric ER. I did school nursing. I worked at Children's in Boston in the neurology department. And then I did work for a plastic surgeon here in Massachusetts. I was one of his staff nurses, assisted with surgeries. And that's really where I got the backbone of what I know. I did take a course that was at a hotel room for 24 hours, not even, like, what was it, an 8-hour class. They taught me Botox and filler in one day. So that was really scary. I had no idea what to do in this industry. I called Allergan, tried to set up an account to buy Botox. And they're like, you're an RN. You can't do that without a doctor. So I was clueless. And then I slowly started to learn more and more. So 12 years ago, at least here in Massachusetts, there was barely anybody doing it. I think there was probably 10 nurses, and nobody was teaching advanced courses. You just had to figure it out. And sometimes I had to Google things and YouTube things. And it's so much easier now, thank God, and so much safer, thank God. I have a pretty extensive background in so many different things. But if somebody's really trying to get into this industry, I am a huge advocate for working in the hospital first, getting your critical thinking skills in. If you're just coming straight out of school, right into aesthetics, I've seen people that have not worked at hospitals, and I've seen people that have. And you can tell the difference. You can tell the difference in the way that they think. And this is not all fun and games. This is beautiful. We're making people happy. We're making them look great. but there's serious consequences and there's serious learning to do in this industry. It's not, like I said, not all fun and games.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think the medical part of it, we talk all the time about, oh, this is real medicine. We say that, but do we actually do it? You know, I think a lot of people who are in this industry come fresh out of school or fresh, you know, they're coming from a background that's, you know, maybe like a private practice office, or they're just seeing, you know, people on a schedule, very, very normal, very, you know, ho-hum. It's different. It's a different world. And I think the critical care skills that you learn, you know, ER, I just had Danny Scher on a couple of days ago, you know, in the ER, learning how to use ultrasound, and like the things that you learn are just so valuable to use a healthcare provider. Forget being instead a healthcare provider, just period. Because I think you see adverse events all the time that you don't even know you see, you know, whether contraindications or skincare concerns or things that, like, unless you've kind of been out there in the world, it doesn't really, you know, it doesn't appear to you to be like an issue that you should resolve. I think about this like lidocaine toxicity. I think about this with, you know, people who have like Bell's palsy coming in for an injection, things like that, that you just don't see every day in aesthetics. But, you know, you mentioned that going to school, all the things, thinking about that, I read somewhere that you had, as you went into this entrepreneurial journey, that your husband, maybe your family, they were kind of like, don't do this, it's not good, like the lack of sort of support in the beginning. I have owned businesses, I agree with you. I think usually your least avid supporters are the ones who are closest to you. The strangers will love you. The people who love you don't love you, you know, when it comes to being an entrepreneur. Give us an idea about that. I think if you're thinking about building a business right now, you got to prepare for that. People are not going to support you. They're going to try to tear you down and cut you down. And you know, even people who are your friends, it's a tainted world out there in aesthetics. So give us an idea of like that whole mentality for you. And you're just saying, screw it, middle finger up, I'm going for it.
Yeah. So I was working at Children's in Boston, and I've always wanted to get into aesthetics. I'm from Miami. You know, Miami's another world, and they're way ahead of the curve in so many things. So I decided to take this class, and I told my husband, and he was like, all for it, go for it. And then when I was more into it and started loving it, and I saw the potential, I saw what I could do and how much I loved it and how much I wanted to be here and not at Children's, which is kind of sad because I still love pediatrics. But so I told him one day, I'm like, I just really want to do this full time. I don't want to work at Children's anymore. And he's like, you're crazy. You got your benefits from there. You have set hours. It's guaranteed pay. You know, how do you know you're even going to make money? Where are you going to get your customers? Where are you going to get your patients? How are you going to market? You've never owned a business before. And so he's a business owner. He has like 5 different corporations, does so many different things, and it's 24/7 work for him. So I always tell people when they want to get into, not necessarily this industry, but when they want to open up their own business, there's a meme out there that says, I quit my 9-to-5 job to open up a business, and now I work 24/7. So that's what he was trying to make me understand. And I'm just such a stubborn girl. So I listened to him that one time, went back to work, but I was miserable, miserable. So I think I stayed for about a month more, and my boss pissed me off. And I just went back home and I said, I can't do it. I cannot do it. I'm so miserable. And I really just want to have my own place. I don't want somebody to tell me what to do, how to do it. And so he said, go for it, go for it. He just knew, he saw it in my heart, in my face. And that was it. Then I started it, but it wasn't something that grew overnight. It took a lot of work. I did everything on my own. I was my, you know, marketing. I was a receptionist. I was a practice manager. I was the injector. Everything. I built my own website, and little by little, I hired an esthetician. Then I hired a front desk person. Then I hired my practice manager. So it was a very slow progress for me. And that doesn't mean it's going to be the same for other people. You could just open up a practice, hire the people you need, get loans taken out, whatever it is you need, get investors. I didn't do it that way. I did it little by little. I started on my own, and I built slowly but surely, and I have zero debt. I have zero loans. Well, I lie. I have a few machines that still have loans on them. But as far as growing the business, I've never had to borrow money from anybody or anything like that. But it's certainly a lot of work. It's not something that is for everybody, but it's something to be proud of. And it's almost like having another child. You know, does that make sense?
Oh, can I? It's like having 18 more children. My little boy is way less work than the static record, I can tell you. I mean, the podcast is a child, AR is a child, the conference is, I have a lot of children over here. But, you know, mm-hmm. I think what you say about it being really hard and difficult is so important for people to understand because, you know, I have so many friends, you know, like you that own businesses, that they're employing other injectors, other laser technicians, other estheticians who, you know, one day say, I want to quit and go open my own business. I'm like, you think you want to do that? But, you know, it takes a big pair of balls to say, I'm going to go open a business and actually do it and be successful. It's a lot of work. I mean, even here, like I don't own AR particularly. It's more of a corporation kind of thing. But, you know, it's like it's my own. It's, you know, when everybody gets to go home, I don't. When everyone gets to have a Christmas day, I don't. You know, you never get to do any of the things people get to do. You're right. You're quitting your 9-to-5 to work 24/7. And you're, you know, both the hero and the villain 24/7 as well. And I think people, they underestimate that, how hard that is. And so, you know, from a hiring perspective, has that happened to you, obviously, where people are like, I'm going to come learn from you and then take my skills and go open my own business down the street? And thinking through that, like, how do you protect yourself from that? How do you tell them in the beginning, like, you're insane, don't own a business, like, come work for me and I'll take care of all the BS and you can just be an injector and enjoy your craft all day?
You just opened up a can of worms, didn't you? So I've hired, okay, let me think how many injectors in all the years that I've hired. So I think my first NP that I hired was probably 6 years ago, maybe more. I have a hard time with time frames. Actually, I think it was more. I think it was probably 8 years ago. So I've been doing this now 12 years. And once it got to the point where I couldn't handle all the influx of patients that wanted appointments, then I was like, all right, I need to hire another injector. The injector had no experience. I trained her. She was as sweet as can be. And she just was a nervous Nelly. Just any little thing, you know, if somebody came back and had an eyebrow that was lifted a little bit too high, or they got a little bit heavy on the brow, she was freaking out and she was crying. So I just had to have this talk with her. I'm like, I don't think this is for you. I don't think this industry is for you. And, you know, no hard feelings. And I hope you're not upset at me. But so that was one. And then I was like, all right, let me just hire people that are already know what to do and they're already experienced. But then you're dealing with maybe habits that you don't like, or that it's not the way my patients are used to. So they're so used to the way I inject. And the reason they walk through the door is because of my reputation and because of the results they've achieved with me. So now I have to create an extension to my knowledge and my training and my expertise. But then they're coming in with their own way of injecting. So it's a little bit tough in that aspect as well. So I've gone back and forth, whether do I hire somebody with experience or do I train somebody from scratch? I've had a couple of good experiences with training somebody from scratch, and they've blossomed and they've killed it and people love them and I get all sorts of great reviews. Then they want to go out on their own. So I'm actually in a really tough place right now as far as deciding which way do I go. Do I invest in training somebody that's as green as can be, or do I hire somebody that's already trained and not put my heart and soul into training them so that they're as perfect as an injector as I want them to be? So I don't know. And then they leave. So I recently had two nurse practitioners here who I trained from scratch, and they both just quit like 2 months ago, right before I graduated. And no comment.
Well, you know, I think it's such an interesting I don't know, paradox, I don't know what you want to call it, paradigm, something, because I think about what you just said about, you know, putting my heart and soul into it. And as a person who, you know, again, runs a business and has other people here, we do that here as well. And, you know, they don't work out sometimes. They often, most times, you know, they do. But my fear is, like, if you don't do that, you know, if you have them come in, like you mentioned, and they're already experienced, they have their own way of doing things, and they don't adopt the Nurse Fiona way, then your patients are at risk of not liking the result or having an issue with that injector. And the patient, so either the patient leaves or the injector leaves. Like, you, either way, you're screwed, right? So it's like one of those, like, this perfect little like a Venn diagram, the perfect little overlap in the middle where the person is great and the patients love them. They all stay together. Everyone stays here. But if you don't have them adopt your ways, that they push back or they're too jaded or they're too experienced, it's like, I know more than you. My way is better than your way. I think there's such a disconnect with the service level there. It's like the McDonald's fries have to taste the same in Germany as they taste in America, as they same, you know, taste in Japan. But again, it takes so much time to train someone, so much effort to train someone, that I almost think that practices who do a lot of hiring need a full-time trainer whose only job in their practice is like to be a nurse injector who has a shadow with them all the time. Like, someone's always there with them, that's always behind, you know, behind them, watching them, learning to inject, because it's excruciating for you as a trainer and an owner and an injector to do all of it. And I can't imagine it, you know, if they leave as well. We have a lot of people who do these contracts where if you leave by a certain day, you have to pay back your, you know, pay back the training fee or pay back to the practice, you know, like an onboarding fee, because it's a lot of money. It's a lot of time spent. But when they go build a practice outside of yours, like, are they close by? Are they, like, you know, throw a rock and hit them from your practice, or do they at least move, you know, 30 minutes away from you?
Yeah. So, one of them, I know she's going to be moving to another state, and I love her to pieces, and she's going to know who she is. I'm sure she's going to watch this. And I actually have zero hard feelings for her. I've watched her blossom. I trained her from scratch. She is a sweetheart, and I wish her so much happiness. And I hope she does amazing things, and she's probably going to open up her own practice. And so you know, there's people like that where I'm like, I have no hard feelings and I want to watch you grow. And you're like my child. I'm releasing you and off you go to college, or off you go to move to another state. And then, you know, and I do have them do a contract. I have them do an agreement that if they leave before X amount of months, they owe me training money, because I don't charge them for that training if they're going to be working here. So, you know, it's basically a trade. You're giving me time and I'm giving you my expertise and all the years of knowledge that I have, that I've paid a lot of money for. So, but then I had another experience where they left before that, and I'm left deciding, what do I do? Do I go after them? Do I just let them step all over me? Oh, it's like a kind of a...
You're like one of five friends of mine I know who has the same problem. It's like, we have the contract, but is it worth it? I will tell you guys, get a good paralegal who can file your briefs for you, like, on behalf of an attorney, and then it doesn't cost much. Heck yeah, go after them. There's no point in having a contract if you can't enforce it. I mean, if somebody screws you, you got to go. I think, you know, I think the contract part of it, the solicitation agreement, is far more impactful than the payback period for the training. I think training, you can make the case. I mean, you guys can, if you're a trainer for a company, you can make the case hours spent. Like, let's say you work for Galderma, you know, I get paid $250 an hour from Galderma, which I'm just putting a random number out here. And, you know, I spend 100 hours with you, it equals X. So I think you can go to court and say, here's what they owe me. But the solicitation, if you're in your contract, you put what each patient is valued at for your practice. And then they had to start doing a discovery, and they find out that they have all your patients on their list, and they email the patients, you know, from your list or on Instagram, yada, yada, yada. That's when the money racks up, because then it's actual business damages. So if you're listening to this, go find an attorney who can help you with your solicitation agreement, but also the period of training. I think it's such a, because it affects your business too. You can't work at full capacity if you're training somebody all day long. And I think you have to recoup the money, because if you don't, then you get in the habit of not doing it, and then there's no point in having the contract. So yes, Fiona, go get your money. Go get what you're owed.
And if you're listening to this and you are somebody that has been hired by a med spa, a physician's office, whatever it may be, and they're training you, don't screw them. Like, they're taking this time to give you everything they know and show you, and it makes me not want to train anybody ever again. And I have so much knowledge to share. I am an excellent injector, and I don't say that Like, I'm not being cocky. I am not a cocky person at all. But when I have patients come in that I have since year one for 12 years, I know I'm doing a great job. And I've spent money on cadaver courses. I've spent money on conferences. I've been in this industry before it blossomed like this. And I had to figure things out on my own. So, you know, and I've had Shino here in my practice train me. I've had Julie Kaplan in here training me. So I've had some of the best injectors offered to me as a service from companies that I didn't even have to pay for. So that just shows how much I'm valued by the industry. But then when somebody comes in and takes advantage of my kindness and of the knowledge that I've given, and then just, it's gross. It's absolutely disgusting behavior. And I don't think there's any space for that in this industry. And I'll call you out on it. I'm not going to do it here on this podcast, but you better believe that it's something I'm not going to stay quiet about. But yeah, I've been screwed multiple ways. People have taken clients. They've told patients in my treatment rooms, hey, I'm going to go be doing home visits. Do you want me to go to your house instead of coming here? I hear it all. And they're working in other spas while working here. I mean, I can just go on and on at the amount of ways that people just think that they can behave. And it's just disgusting. It's disgusting behavior. And I think that the industry can do better. Sorry.
No, you know, I think it's one of those interesting parts of, again, we're in this mix of retail, beauty, hair care, medicine, like, you know, we're this like little, like a cesspool, frankly, in some ways, because we want to be a medical, you know, a specialty that's medical and all the things we say. And I don't know, there's probably drama in cardiology and there's drama in neurology and, you know, cardiothoracic surgeons are sleeping with the neuro, whatever. I'm sure it all happens. But here it just feels different. You know, it feels like it's oftentimes a very catty, back-ended thing. People, you know, leaving A to go to B. Or like in your case, if you train someone and they go start their own business and they've not really fully developed yet as an injector, that's my biggest fear, is like people who start on their own, like start out on their own. How? If no one is there to check your work and to help you, like how in the crap are you going to learn how to do this? Because to your point, weekend courses are not going to be enough. You can have Julie in your practice every single day and not become good, because you need to be able to have somebody with you all the time teaching you how to do this and being a mentor to you. And you can't get that on your own. So I feel like if you don't spend 3 years in a practice with somebody else, like 3 years of just hardcore nonstop injecting, you don't stand a chance. And I will mark my words, if you're listening to this, I don't think you stand a chance of being successful long term, because you just haven't seen enough yet to be scared shitless, to know what adverse events really are and how to find them, and also enough to understand the politics of patients and also the politics of the industry. Because you have two different people here, you know, always forcing pressure on you, the industry people and also the patients doing it. You gotta get your skin thick. It just takes time. I'll probably get a lot of hate mail for saying that, but I think it takes, you know, I think 3 years is a safe bet. You wouldn't go do cardiology. You wouldn't go do a heart transplant after a weekend course. Like, you know, if you want to be your own medicine, be your own medicine. You gotta pick a side here. I'm also on a soapbox, Fiona. Look what you've done to me. Turn me into a TED talk.
And don't get me started on the people that call themselves master injectors. Don't get me started on that. Like, I don't even know who's giving out these master injector awards or the other awards or the, like, I've never even paid for any of those things. A lot of them are paid.
PSA, the next fees are not paid. They're all done by voting. So, and we do check every practice and person who votes, make sure that they are legitimate, because it's, you know, I think it's important. People, and I think the word master, I work a lot on the compliance side. I think, you know, from an FTC perspective, people on social media, I think about this. This is what keeps me up at night, is people are like, oh, she looks 10 years younger. Oh, wow, we have a miracle cure. You know, oh, wow, this Botox is so great. Like, if you're a medical professional saying that on Instagram, you are liable. You are reporting false outcomes. So your Instagram is like a medical platform. And so I think about that all the time with these awards. Like, to use the word master tells a patient who's a layman that you have a superior credentialing than anybody else. That's not real. So in a court of law, you'd be screwed for that. You can't say you're an advanced injector, a master injector. We have no credentialing in this industry. We have no, we have CANs, but that's still not, it doesn't go across all. So it can't really qualify. It doesn't, you know, you can't have a PA doing it or a physician. So, you know, I think as we look at the industry crackdown, they watch Instagram all the time. I have some friends who do this a lot. And the FTC, they love watching Instagram. They love to go after people who put things on the website about injecting exosomes is one of them, or stem cells, and harvesting, like the things people say, like you cannot have false claims. And so, yeah, I think the master injector thing is going to get people into a lot of trouble before long. I feel it in my bones, Fiona. You can't do that. It's not real. And it tells the patient things that aren't true, and it makes you liable for that.
I do agree with you. And I did get my CANS certification. So if some of you don't know what that is, it's Certified Aesthetic Nurse Specialist. And it's offered by the PSN, I believe. I know they have their own conference, but it is it's a certification that you sit for an exam. And I think it's might be the only one out there right now that actually makes you a certified aesthetic nurse specialist, right? And yes, it's only for nurses. It's not for PAs. It's not for doctors. So it's not straight across the board. But so I got this, I want to say maybe 10 years ago. And at the time, there was only one other nurse here in Massachusetts that had that certification. So I was the second one in Mass to get it. Nobody's telling me to do these things. I just decided this was an important thing for me to determine my worth and to kind of market myself better to patients. But also, it's you need criteria to get this certification. So I think it means a lot. And I think there definitely needs to be more regulations on who's injecting and how much experience they have before they start injecting or before they open up a practice. I don't know when that would happen, and I don't know how that can happen, but I think it should. I mean,
well, don't we all? I think CANS is actually about to open it to PAs. I've heard that they're going to try to include PAs in their, you know, their overall group. But you're right. They're the only ones that I know of that are doing anything. And, you know, they're pretty rigorous, like the program to study and to take the test. Yeah, it's pretty intense. I know Connie Brennan is a big part of that. Jerry Obie, the whole group, Haley, all working on that all the time. And that's our only option. But I think I just read last night that somebody is doing it in a medical school now for the nurses. As part of like a medical school adjunct to the nursing program, they're doing like a plastic surgery combo where the plastic surgeons and the nurses go together to learn how to be an aesthetics practitioner. Like, how to do not only just injectables, but how to work with patients when you're an injector, you know, the whole other part of the industry that's not just about medicine. Because to your point, owning a business, you don't learn any of that stuff in medical school or nursing school. You have no idea how to do really non-bedside nursing things. Like, you know, I think about a nurse all the time in the hospital. She doesn't do her own order. She doesn't do her own, you know, she's working off of somebody else's kind of list of things every day. And then now it's like, well, poof, you're in your own practice. You have your own rules. You're on your own. And that's a lot of on your ownness all at once without a lot of direction of how to do it, because you've been in the hospital for 3 or 4, you know, 4 years. So I think there is a big gap there. But, you know, thinking about looking for the future from, you know, getting CANS 10 years ago, nurse practitioner. So I think this is the other part of the industry that's going to be a big tumultuous battle is the states are going to start saying RNs, you can no longer inject. We already see it in Louisiana. We see it in Florida. It's coming everywhere. And so I think you saw the writing on the wall a few years ago and said, hey, I should go ahead and get this, because you have to co-own your practice now, I believe, with a physician. So what was your impetus for getting your nurse practitioner license? And how has that process kind of unfolded? And has it made you a better injector and a better nurse, period? Or was it more of just like, hey, I'm done. Like, thank God I'm done and we're finished. How did it impact you?
So, few years ago, I would say probably 8 years ago, I saw the writing on the wall and I started to kind of ask questions to other people in the industry, other physicians. I said, do you think I should go back to get my NP? And a lot of people said, no, not necessary, not necessary, not necessary. And I feel like people still say that. But if you really think about how we do things, right? The patient is coming to see us. And now things have gotten a lot better with live orders, with aesthetic record, with other platforms that offer that. But back in the day when this didn't exist, you know, I don't want to say too much because I don't want to get other people in trouble or myself in trouble, but things were just not done correctly.
And they're still not done correctly. If you know, they're still not done correctly. I can promise you, I see everyone's records. They're still not anywhere close to being done correctly. So you will not call anybody out. You can just blanket it for the industry that we are still not compliant in many, many ways.
So I see the non-compliance and I see the problems and how do you solve that problem? How do you inject legally and responsibly as a registered nurse without being able to prescribe, without being able to diagnose? How do you do that? I don't know. You answer that question. But so I basically saw that it was very difficult, and the gray area of aesthetics is becoming smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. It used to be so much more gray, and you could probably get away with so much more because there isn't written laws. There isn't a lot of things in black and white. So I said, to hell with this. I'm not losing my license. I'm not losing the business that I worked so hard for, that I was blindly advised or non-advised on the laws of how to do this. So like I said, back when I started, there was nothing. We were figuring this out on our own. And I knew something was wrong. So I said, okay, the only way that I can really be compliant is if I go back to school. And that was very difficult. I mean, I have two children, both of them have learning disabilities. And, you know, I hadn't been in school in years. I hadn't finished my bachelor's. I had my associates, you know, single mom for a long time. And then having a child with ASD, with autism, and just so much. I said, how the hell am I going to do this? So I found a wonderful online program. You only had to go on campus twice a semester. Obviously, you have to do your clinicals, but it took me 4 years from start to finish to do my prereqs that I was missing. I was missing like three classes, started the master's program and did my FNP. So I'm a family nurse practitioner now, just graduated in May, got my license in June. I passed my boards on the first try and got my DEA, got my NPI. I have everything. I'm ready to roll. And now I have nothing to worry about. I don't have to, you know, go to bed worried that the Board of Nursing is going to come knocking at my door and saying, where's your medical director? Let me see your orders. How are you, you know, are these live orders? Who's signing for you? So I always felt the need that I needed to have nurse practitioners here on site. And I did. And they would see the new patients. And then I felt so much more safer. But at the end of the day, I was a prisoner to hiring nurse practitioners to cover my ass. And I just was tired of it. I was tired of it. And I see it in Florida, right? And like you said, Louisiana, I guess now, Jersey is another one, I believe. Rhode Island, I think, is on the way from what I hear. So I just think it's the correct way to do things. I'm sure there's loopholes. I'm sure you could figure it out. I was done. I was done trying to figure it out. And I was done being nervous whether, you know, somebody was going to claim that I wasn't doing things correctly. And then the part of owning your practice on your own as an RN in the state of Massachusetts, you cannot own a practice on your own. So you do have to find yourself an attorney, and, you know, you create a management company that oversees your company. And then you have, but there's so much that goes with that. You know, you have to create bank accounts and the money has to funnel through there and go through here. And it's very complex. So is it easier to go that route, hire a great attorney, they set up your business model perfectly, or do you go back to school and you don't have to worry as much?
Well, I think it's a no-brainer for sure. But I think even in what you just said, it's also a matter of like, do I have time to, what you said, fitting in time. People think they don't have time to do it. They can't do it. I did a PhD when I was working a million hours at Galderma of Running Gain. I remember defending my PhD on site at Galderma, like defending it and my thesis whole thing in between meetings at Galderma, because it was like, you know, a virtual thing. And you just figure it out. Like you just gotta do it. And it does suck. It's terrible. And having to do homework all day is awful. But the risk is so great in the industry right now. And I think what you said about black and white becoming, you know, far more normal now, and the gray is getting smaller and smaller. It's only a loophole until you get caught, you know, and the loophole is only as good as a person who doesn't know how to get around that and say, actually, you are in violation of the law. And I think in this industry, for some reason, and I don't know what it is, even as an injectable rep back in the day at Galderma, the things people would do are egregious. Like they were, you know, whether it's bootleg product from Canada, or they have no physician anywhere in sight, they have no adverse event plan, they're an RN, they're an LPN, they're an esthetician in Texas injecting. It isn't about saying someone's good or bad. You know, it's not saying that you can't inject, that you're not a good injector. It's more of, legally, no one cares if you're good. Like in an objective court of law, your skill set means absolutely nothing. It's like the law is the law is the law. And so, you know, it's hard to defend things that legally are just not okay. And I think what, you know, you're experiencing it as others are, is that it's going to be part of every state's sort of medical nursing board makeup. Nursing board is lobbying for RNs, but the medical board is lobbying against them, obviously. So it's just this big crescendo of a fight. And at some point they're going to say, you have to be an MP or PA. You have to be able to prescribe and diagnose what you said is perfect in order to do this, to treat, treat patients, or you're going to be considered like an orders nurse, like you are in a hospital and you have no rights and no, ability to do anything. And then we don't want that either. So it's coming, guys. I have no doubt it's coming. The problem that we have though in this industry is that we don't teach anyone that up front. We don't say to them in nursing school, this is going to happen to you. You need to keep going because you can't do all these things yet. Because again, there is no business curriculum in nursing school. There is no, business ownership idea kind of part of it. We have a gap there. I feel like the onus is on people like you who've kind of lived it and who have been through there to mentor others who are coming up to say, you got to go back to school. You got to finish it. If you're young and you're not at the end of your career, there's no reason you shouldn't go back because, the risk is too great. Too great.
I agree. And as far as being taught how to run a business, and I never was taught that either, but nothing was handed to me young, as a child or as an adolescent or as a young adult. I made poor choices and I own up to those choices. I had a son very young at 22. I mean, not that young, but I, was a single mom for a long time. I worked, I had food stamps. I lived in Section 8 housing. Nothing was handed to me. So I'm not looking for handouts here either. I'm here hustling. I'm here figuring it out. And I think if I can do it, everybody else can. But I don't know if the new generation coming in, if they're just so used to people like handing them things. But it's when you run a business, there's just so many moving parts. And you have to be able to switch hats at a blink of an eye and deal with a complication with a patient all of a sudden, or deal with an upset client calling on the phone, or employees. Employees are another aspect to owning a business. Those are my other children. And I say it to them all the time. I'm like, you guys are my kids and I have your best interest at heart. And I have such a powerful role that I'm providing a life for them. I'm providing security for them, financial stability. And that's such a huge, it's a huge role. And it's very humbling to be able to provide that to another human. So like I said, I feel like they're my kids, but they have needs. They have tons of needs. So it's, my phone never ends. I'm always like, one is texting me about this, one is texting me about that. Then there's the patients that are texting on the emergency line. So after hours, I may not be here, but I'm here. I'm like you said, it never turns off, never. And people need to understand that. It looks very glamorous and shit, I make this look really nice and really easy and really fun, but you almost have to play the role. You have to play the part and you got to have a good poker face. You can't freak out over little things, and you have to be happy with what you do, but there are consequences and there's struggles that come with this that a lot of people don't know and they don't realize. It's very easy to come in, inject and leave and get a paycheck, but I wouldn't want to do that, but some people do. There's others that love that. They just want to go to work and get a paycheck and go home. I guess I'm a glutton for punishment.
Yeah, you know, and I think about that sometimes, even like with, you know, the whole injector role. But thank God they want to come and get a paycheck and go home, because else we wouldn't have any staff. And I think there's so much more you can do as an injector. You can be a trainer as well. You can, you know, train in your own business, learn devices. You know, there's ways to make it interesting and fun that, you know, they can do more above and beyond and make it really fulfilling for an injector to do, not just like injections all day long. But, you know, this is very hard. And I think the disservice that we've done to ourselves, and someone told me this last year, year before, they said, you know, you make it look so easy because you don't have a choice. We're in aesthetics. It has to look easy. It can't look hard. It can't look disheveled. It can't look tired. It has to look perfect and curated, and the hair and the makeup and everything put together, because of our industry. Like, we're our own worst enemy, because even we're all dying and struggling and it's hard, and motherhood's a whole different animal amongst being a business owner and all the other things. We can't look unpolished. And so we've almost done it to ourselves. We've made it look so easy and fun and neat that everyone wants to come do it now. And they realize, oh my God, it's freaking hard. And so we're all like drowning behind these like really perfect masks of perfection with our little perfectly toxined faces. And we're all like, could somebody throw me a freaking lifesaver and like, get me out of here. But we're our own, you know, our own worst enemy. But I think you're right. It's hard and it sucks and it's difficult, but at the end of the day, it's also rewarding. Like you mentioned, you know, I have a very large staff here, and it's so fun to watch them develop and blossom and grow. And also to think that, you know, but the burden is heavy. Like, they depend on me to feed their families and to, you know, pay their house payments and their mortgage payments and all these things. It's a heavy burden to bear, but also one that when you can get them promotions and pay raises and new career opportunities, like, it's also so fulfilling. But man, it's a long day. It's a long day. It's a long life. It's a long year every day of my life. So I completely sympathize with you in doing that. But all that to say, besides your, you know, the experience, non-experience kind of dichotomy there, what are your other HR challenges? I'm just curious if you have any.
I think keeping people on and satisfying their needs and things like benefits, you know, I know that's like typical HR stuff. Do you provide insurance for them? Do you provide vacation pay? Do you provide retirement? So I have been in touch with somebody that is helping me line those things up. They're expensive. They're very expensive to provide those types of benefits. And as a small business owner, I only have one location right now. I see other people opening up multiple locations, and I'm like, how the heck are you doing that? Like, it's so hard. But I think just providing them, again, more stability, more like lifestyle support, you know, is part of the role you take on as a business owner. And it's something that I'm actively trying to figure out. And I think it was in the back burner for a little while because of school. So now that I'm done and I can focus my efforts more on that, I have a couple of ideas on how to reward my employees and how to keep them here and keep them invested in the business. Because at the end of the day, I wouldn't have all this if it wasn't for them. You know, I do put a lot of work and a lot of energy in this, but my employees are stellar. They're amazing. They're I don't even know if I would call them the backbone. They're the walls of this building. They hold this place up. And without all of us here doing everything that we do, this place would fall down. So, and I make sure that they know that, and they're, you know, I appreciate them. I give them vacations. I give them holidays. I give them all sorts of perks. My esthetician just did her 5-year anniversary. I took her to Louis Vuitton. She got to pick out whatever purse she wanted. And so I took her on a little shopping spree, and just whatever you can think of that will make people happy. You just have to try to do that, I guess. But I'm just learning this along as I go. So I don't have any business advisors. Might have to hire one. I'm not sure.
At some point you will. I think at some point everyone has to have one, because you mature out of, you know, to a different level. And it's like all of a sudden the stakes are different, and you don't want to start all over again. You know, it's like you go to a new level and you have to start all over again and you have to keep learning and learning. And so I think it's a great idea at some point also just to bounce ideas off someone, because oftentimes you get in your own little world, you get sort of tunnel vision, and it's easier to make decisions that are easy. It's easier to do the easy thing sometimes, and you always want to say, wait, that's too easy. Go the hard route, like the NP thing, right? For you, the easy route is just to keep doing what you were doing, but the hard route is the better route. It's just making the, pulling the Band-Aid off and doing it. But you said something that kind of always piques my interest. We had Shelby Miller on months ago for podcast season 3, and she mentioned like her building. She has a giant facility. She's like, I don't want to have more of them. I want to have one that's giant, because having more of them is a multiplicative problem. It's more to scale. I'm not there. I can't, you know, take control of things. I just want to have a really big, like, you know, the mothership, if you will. And so, you know, you just said I have one. I think that there's people who just need to have one because it's different. Scale's a different game. Do you foresee yourself expanding your space to like a bigger version of your current you? Or do you see yourself at some point going to different locations?
So now, you know, after finishing school and I definitely have more time on my hands, I definitely want to continue to grow this space. It's not at its full potential. I have 6 treatment rooms and they're not all filled all at once. So my goal is to have them going all at once. I'm going to start doing the IV vitamins again, which I used to do, you know, years ago. Nobody was doing it. And I stopped doing it during COVID. And then I was in school and I was like, I really just don't want to deal with this. So now that's coming back. So bringing more services to the building. But then, yes, I am looking at other locations as well to open up smaller locations. So nothing huge, something very manageable. Again, I don't have any partners. I'm a solo owner. My husband has his own set of businesses that he's taking care of. So this is something that I'm just going to take on my own. But I definitely do want to open up other locations. Probably we'll do one down in Florida. So I have my license down there as well. They actually haven't given me my NP license. I applied for it, so I'm just waiting for that. But I have my RN license still down there. So I just have to wait for my NP, because that is one of the states that doesn't allow RNs to inject. And my son's down there. He's living down there now. My older son, he's 21. So we have this like little idea that he's going to open up his tuning shop. So he's really into cars. And he's going to be tuning all of like the high-end cars. So he's going after the husbands and I'm going to go after the wives. All the rich people with the Ferraris.
That's actually a really smart idea. Throw a tattoo parlor in there and you have the whole mix. You get their kids too.
Exactly.
Well, I think you should definitely do Florida. It gives you an excuse to write off all the travel to go to the nice, you know, warm state, all because you're in a very cold environment. I don't know how you guys live in the northeastern area of the country. Like, F no, not doing it. Can't handle it. It's 110 degrees in Dallas and I love it. It's so warm here. But I think Florida is a great next move. And I think, you know, to that point, you're opening a facility far away from you where you have to like intentionally go there and book days there. It's different. Then I'm going to say I'm going to open up the exact same business, you know, an hour away from here with the same amount of employees, same amount of everything, that, you know, the same amount of headaches. That's a lot to multiply. And so let us know when you go to Florida. We'll come by and I'll come by and say hi. It'll be a reason to fly down to the sunny state and, you know, hang out for a little bit.
Oh, yeah. So my mom still lives down there. So as you know, I was born and raised in Miami. I'm not going to do it in Miami. I have some colleagues down there that have a practice and they're doing fantastic. So I refer everybody over there that is in Miami area. It's just not my vibe anymore. So probably somewhere like, actually, I don't want to say.
Don't say. Don't give it away.
I'm not giving it away. A, because I think that jinxes it. And B, there's too many haters out there and I'm just sick of it. I'm just tired. And you know what? I'm going to start protecting myself. I'm going to be a smarter girl. So it's going to be somewhere there in Florida. And it won't be as big as this. I mean, we're about 2,500 square feet, I think, my whole building. So it'll be a little bit on a smaller scale. And as far as like machines go, I don't know. These devices, some of them are fantastic. Some of them are full of, are we allowed to curse?
You can. You just can't say the F word.
Some of them are full of shit. You know, they're just, it's a little bit of a money pit with some of these machines. They're expensive as hell. So you're looking at anywhere from like 80 to like 250, you know, depending what type of technology it is. But, you know, and then you have all these loans that go with it. And sometimes it's hard to get people to do these treatments. They're expensive and they're giving minimal results or they're very painful. So I don't know about these devices. I'm kind of at a standstill and I get all these reps that walk through the door and I hope they're listening, but I'm behind the wall hiding, just so you know.
I think that's so common that we call it the laser graveyard, where everything that you bought that doesn't work anymore goes and sits in the back of the practice. And it's like, how many millions of dollars are back there sitting, collecting, you know, they're like, it's like the treadmill at your house that you like hang your clothes on. I feel like that's very normal. And I think you're right. Like, you have to have a business plan. You have to have, you know, think about your market. They come in and say, it's going to, you know, you're going to sell everything. It's going to be so great. Pay it back in 6 months. Like, in what planet? If I were only doing this device all day long, sure. But I have to do injectables and I have an esthetician doing facials and I have to do IVs and I can't just do this thing all day long and sustain my practice. So I think they're, you know, the payback period is always a little bit lofty for me, but then some of them are amazing. Like the Silpharm X, Benev obsessed, like a phenomenal device. Yeah, I think there's some microneedling that's really big right now. But some of the other stuff is just like, I don't know, too painful. I can't do it. I'm not a wuss, but it's like, if this is that painful, go get a facelift. Like, go get something else more invasive done that has great results. If you're going to sit here and suffer for 2 hours to get it done, it's just not worth it for me. But that's just my two cents. So,
and I agree with you. And unfortunately, I'm a very, very honest person. Fortunately for my patients, I'm an honest person. Unfortunately for myself and for the reps, I'm not going to bullshit people. I'm not going to tell them that they're going to get this amazing result. And they're showing you, when they're selling you these machines, they're showing you the best of the best of the best picture that they have. And, you know, you're not always going to get those results. So, and people aren't always going to want to pay that huge ticket price that they're telling you that they will pay. So they're like, oh, people will pay this $1,000 a treatment all day long. You're going to have that machine paid off in 6 months, like you said. And guess what? They're not paying that price. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it's the area that I'm in, but it's not what they're saying it is. It's sales. They're selling you. Their job is to sell you a machine and they're going to do their best to sell you that machine. You want to hear a crazy story? I had a rep come in here. I don't even remember who it was. And if they listen to this, so be it. They offered to make a donation to an autism awareness fund and to another, God, what was the other one? Anyway, so they did their research and they knew that my son was autistic. And they knew one of my employees that her mother had died of a certain disease. And they said, we're going to make a donation to your, you know, where your son has autism. We're going to make a donation there. And then we're going to make a donation to one of your other employees where her mom passed away from this disease. If you buy this machine. I didn't even know what to say. I thought it was the most disgusting thing I had ever heard. And I don't know if I was looking too much into it, but I found that to be insultive. I'm like, so the only way that you're going to make a donation to these charities is if I buy your machine? Like, and you did your research purposely to figure out which one I would want you to? It's almost like they thought they were doing a great thing, but it really, in reality, I was like, this is disgusting.
It's like an ethical dilemma too. I think legally you can't do that. Like legally that's considered to be, you know, it's not sunshine, but it's like inducement, I think is what you would call it, where you're not going to get kickback, but they're doing something that's financially exchanging money to get you to buy something. Like that is a little dicey, Fiona. Did you tell him to go take it outside? Hopefully in your not so nice way, you told him to pound sand.
I was like, yeah, go fly a kite. No. So they didn't speak to me directly. They, I think they gave this information to my practice manager. And when she told me, I was so mad. I didn't even know what to say. I just told them in the nicest way possible, go tell them to you know, off. I was like, please just go tell them to off themselves.
To off themselves.
Like,
you
not
have to say unalived. Well, that's shocking. Actually, no, it's not shocking. I think we hear, you know, if you'll buy four, I'll give you 15 for free. And it's also the issue that the playing field's not level because people are negotiating to get these crazy sample deals and they're netting down their cost. And, you know, it's whatever, however good of a negotiator you are, you get what you want. You know, if you're a big headache for a vendor, they'll just give you stuff to shut you up. And, you know, I've been on that side of it too. It's a tangled web there, but we've been on this for like an hour, which is shocking to me. We could be here all day long, but I do want to wrap up and just, you know, get some highlights in. So now that you're done with your nursing program, your MP is finished, done on the wall with the diploma, all good. I'm sure you have many more things that are coming up next. I know that you're being a good girl and protecting yourself, but will we finally see you at any conferences or out and about? So are you going to emerge from your shell since you haven't been basically a recluse for the past 2 years?
From my cocoon back
your
here,
cocoon.
I've been like stuffed in the torture chamber of school. Yeah, I mean, I'm considering going to Aesthetic Next 5.0.
You should be there.
I know, of course you're going to be there. So I don't know. I'm enjoying my summer. I have a cute little house in Cape Cod, and I'm just enjoying every moment of my son. So my 12-year-old is here. My other 21-year-old is in Miami. He's coming to visit for Labor Day weekend. And I don't know, I'm just enjoying life and just trying to hit the reset button before I think come fall. There's some things up my sleeve, and it's not just other locations, it's other things with the industry. But I'm keeping it hush hush because it's just something I don't want to reveal and don't want somebody to snag away from me, snag my ideas, because that's something that happens. But you'll see me.
Well, I'll be checking the Instas to find out what's going on, because now you have my curiosity piqued, and I don't want to know, because if it gets out, it wasn't me. So don't even tell me. But yes, yeah, so I'll be checking back in with you maybe October, November to see what's in the pipeline for you and what's coming. But thank you for coming on today. Like I said, I've known you for a lot of years and watched you blossom as a business owner, as an injector, obviously getting, you know, your MP finished. I'm sure it's a huge weight off your chest. But I think only the sky is the limit now. You can do whatever you want now that you're done doing homework. You have a whole new life. And I can't wait to see what's going to be.
I love it. Thank you. I really appreciate you taking me on. And when I saw that you were like, who's next for season 4? And I was like, yeah, me. I'm ready.
So, well, I'm glad you did.
I love seeing your face. I want to see you in person and give you a big hug.
Well, hopefully if you guys are watching, you can see it. She has this incredible like graffiti wall painting thing that she's sitting in front of that. I want that here. It looks so cool. So you get the best backdrop of the season award already. Like, I already know it's going to be you. I love it.
Thank you. I can zoom out a little bit more if you want to.
Oh yeah, I do want to see it. That's gorgeous.
You can see my setup. I'm on I have my ring light here, and then where my computer is set up, it's actually the like the little rolly medication table that you put like your injectables.
Very smart. You can do all kinds of different angles. I love it.
Yeah. So it's just a big wall, and it kind of looks like me, but it's not. It's not, I don't know if it was supposed to be me, but I had an artist do this from scratch. He's awesome. And yeah, so it's just wrapped on the wall. There's Fiona graffiti.
It looks very cool. If you guys are like, how do I see this? Go to YouTube or go to Spotify Premium and you can watch the whole episode. You can watch us here live. And I'm in the studio and she's at her practice out in the outskirts of Boston. So, well, thank you for coming on and for being here with us today and for sharing your candid view of the industry and what's going on. I appreciate that so much. And hopefully we'll solve some of the problems that you mentioned and some of the gray will get even smaller. But with all that, I guess we're going to sign off.
Sounds great.
Well, yeah. I'll see you guys all next week. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of For the Record. This podcast is not intended to provide legal or medical advice. It's for entertainment, education, and information purposes only. For more information on this week's guest or to get started with Aesthetic Record, email us at info@aestheticrecord.com. Be sure to tune in next week for more fresh perspectives on disrupting the status quo and surviving in the aesthetics industry.